Sound therapy allows you to feel lighter. It actually helps with pain. And sometimes it may cause you to feel a certain like tension in your body, but if you breathe through it, it's really helping to move the energy through your chakras. So it decreases that tension. It actually can improve circulation. It can help lower your blood pressure. And it can be very healing for some people. So it's a music in general we think of as a very powerful tool.
Welcome to the Plant-Based DFW Podcast Weekly Show with Dr. Riz and Maya, a show broadcasted from the Dallas-Fort Worth area that focuses on lifestyle medicine. This is the use of evidence-based lifestyle therapeutic approaches, such as a whole food plant-based diet, regular physical exercise, adequate sleep, and stress management to treat, prevent, and oftentimes reverse lifestyle-related chronic diseases that are all too prevalent. Every week, they feature a guest who speaks on one of these lifestyle medicine pillars. This show is for you, the person who is seeking to improve your overall wellness and quality of life. So whether you are driving, walking, or relaxing at home, we hope this show will provide you one more tool for your wellness toolbox. Let's meet today's podcast guest.
Today we will be learning about sound therapy to improve our health. And the physician who will speak about this field is Dr. Michelle Thompson Olson. She is a triple board certified physician in integrative lifestyle and osteopathic family medicine. She specializes in treating the root cause of health problems, not just the symptoms. Currently, Dr. Thompson is employed by the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and has a full-time integrative family medicine practice. Her specialty is reversing disease through diet, exercise, and lifestyle changes while empowering her patients to take charge of their health and work as a team with their physician. Be Well Therapies has expertise in lifestyle medicine, integrative wellness, and mind-body medicine skills. They specialize in working with healthcare professionals, transforming burnout, prioritizing self-care, and igniting change. Their website is bewelltherapies.org. You can find Dr. Michelle Thompson on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, and on Clubhouse. I'll include all of those links. In this episode, which by the way is episode 125, Dr. Thompson will talk to us about sound therapy. Sound healing therapy uses aspects of music to improve physical and emotional health and well-being. The person being treated partakes in the experience with a trained practitioner. Music therapy may involve listening to music or singing along to music. Music therapy can reduce stress and promote relaxation. It's been shown to be more effective than prescription drugs in reducing anxiety levels before surgery. A study published in 2017 found that a 30-minute music therapy session combined with traditional care after spinal surgery reduced pain. So, I hope that you enjoy this episode. Also, you can find me on Clubhouse at Maya Acosta. And thanks again for listening.
Welcome, Dr. Thompson.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And I'm excited to finally have a more like in-depth conversation with you. I met you in 2019 briefly at the Lifestyle Medicine Conference in 2019. So, and by the way, it's coming up again, and this year it will be in person. So I'm excited about the conference.
Yes, me too. It'll be nice to get back together with people.
Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about integrative medicine. We'll talk about the mind-body connection. You have such a fascinating background, and you're so involved. I feel like you have your hands on so many things that I would love to learn more about. Before we talk about all that, can you kind of take us back to an earlier time in your life before you chose to go to medical school? Was there anything that influenced you to choose to be a physician?
My son had some health problems when he was little, and I wasn't treated very well by the hospital system and the physicians. And so that was really what made me want to get into medicine, because I wanted to really take good care of people and make sure that they felt seen and felt heard and felt cared for. And I wanted to provide medicine in a different way. I actually had an osteopathic family physician, and he did an adjustment on me one time when my back was out, and he fixed me like this. And so I thought, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to just fix things so quickly like that. And I want people to feel like love, they love their physician and, you know, they feel that connection. So that was really my driving force for getting into medicine.
Were there any physicians in your family?
No physicians wow. in my family whatsoever. Actually, interestingly, I was told it was too hard to be a physician. My guidance counselor in high school said, no, you don't want to go into medicine. She said, it's too hard. And I was told by my family that people where you come from don't become a doctor, because I really came from a family where no one was educated in college, except my grandmother got educated later on in life. And looking back, I feel like I looked up to her so much, because when I said I wanted to go to college, she was supportive of me and went with me to apply to college. And then she went with me to my medical school interview. And, you know, she was always with me every step of the way. So she's no longer with us. So a lot of the things I really learned afterwards, I learned were, wow, I'm like her. I guess I do things the way I do things because of her. I have a cassette tape in 1980 of relaxation exercises and meditation. And she was teaching that because she became a counselor. So I have this now that I listen to when I'm like trying to make decisions. And, you know, I go and just listen to my grandmother's voice. So it's very nice to have that. But
now you do implement yoga, meditation, Tai Chi, all sorts of alternatives to really get the body to people to optimize their health. And here your grandmother kind of did plant a seed in that way and did nurture that part.
I really want to get it on my website, but it's trying to figure out how do you get a cassette tape. I need somebody to help me with this. Anybody that's out there listening, reach out to me. How do I get this cassette tape onto my own website? Yeah. So I also went right from college to medical school, but then I took a break and I ran a massage therapy school in 1998 to 2001. I was the director of massage therapy at Great Lakes Institute of Technology. And that's really where I thought my integrative journey began, because I learned massage therapy and neuromuscular therapy and reflexology and really Eastern medicine, tying it in with Western medicine. So when I went back to medical school, I went in with this fresh set of eyes, like, wow, there's something more out there instead of just osteopathic medicine. There's even this Eastern philosophy. So I was integrative in 1998, really, is when I started my own integrative journey. I changed my own diet in 1992, and I have been a vegetarian ever since then. So almost 30 years, actually. And then I was an integrative physician and practicing integrative medicine. And then the lifestyle medicine kind of, you know, came into the forefront. And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of fascinating as well. So I'm board certified in lifestyle medicine and integrative medicine. And I also incorporate mind-body medicine through awesome. The Center for Mind-Body Medicine. So when you look at lifestyle medicine, it breaks it down into those six pillars of, you know, as we all know, exercise and sleep and food and connection and avoidance of risky substances and stress management. But integrative medicine really takes it a step further and helps you to figure out how to do stress management and what are these different modalities for connection. And it really is just another piece that you can help people with, you know, sound therapy, like we're going to talk about, or art therapy, or, you know, what Tai Chi or yoga or Qigong, or, you know, maybe some botanicals, you know, some herbs I have sitting with me right now. I have kava tea. Just Yogi makes a great tea that they have, that I do a cup of ginger tea every day of my life. And I use some of the calming teas, and I use mm-hmm. some of the nighttime teas, you know, just in my own life. And so, and then essential oils, which I have also sitting right here next to me and on my bracelet, you know. So aromatherapy is something also that it falls in the integrative medicine category. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then the mind body medicine is a whole nother like wonderful icing on, you know, the cherry on top of the sundae, really, because it really, if you know lifestyle medicine and you know integrative medicine, but you're not connecting at all with your own mind and your own body, then you're not going to be as healthy. Because one of the things we learned, if you look at the documentary called Heal, that 90% of the diseases begin in the mind. So if our mind and our body are not connected, then we're not able to be healthy and well. So I really loved that whole philosophy of the mind-body medicine. It really was the final piece in, I think, the puzzle of the way I wanted to practice medicine.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you're on and that you're talking about this, especially that 90% of diseases originate from the way that we view life, our perspective. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, or stress, the way we stress.
And we had a lot of stress last year, so...
Well, and so Dr. James Gordon, who is actually the founder of the Center for Mind Body Medicine, he wrote a book called Transforming Trauma, The Path to Hope and Healing. And it really, you know, his original book was called The Transformation, which talked about people that go through trauma. And trauma can be grief, it can be divorce, it can be a medical problem, it can be, you know, many different things that we were not thinking. Actually, when I started my own studying of mind body medicine, I thought to myself, oh, these poor people who went through trauma. And I didn't realize that I had childhood trauma as well. And it really helped me to create that awareness. But then when the pandemic hit, we all went into trauma. Our whole world is in global trauma. And so because I had those connections in mind-body medicine, I immediately rolled everything into helping my colleagues navigate this pandemic and care for themselves the best way they could. And I started mind-body medicine skills groups for physicians so that we could connect. So once a week, we would connect on the screens and check in with one another. And, you know, learn mind body skills techniques like soft belly breathing or shaking and dancing or autogenic training, guided imagery, mindful eating, all these different modalities. People think just meditation is just sitting there like this, right? Like, boom, you know, that's what they think, but it's really not. You could be meditative walking, you could be meditating as you're showering. I just did that the other day. I like took a meditative shower. So, you know, really being present and thinking about the water on your body and thinking about the smell. I have a eucalyptus spray that I'll spray in the shower. You could just put a few drops of eucalyptus on a washcloth and, you know, really go into that whole journey of utilizing all of your senses and becoming completely present, alert, and alive. Mm-hmm.
So you were teaching your colleagues all these different ways of really managing the stress and getting through last year. So what was the feedback that you received and how effective was this for them?
It was life-changing. Actually, like I get teary-eyed when we talk about it, because when I first started doing the mind-body medicine training, I said, I'm never running a group. That was my intention was just to do the training for myself. And it hit me that my colleagues needed it so much. And I also wanted to connect with them. And so just like we were talking about the pieces of lifestyle medicine, connection is so important. Not just, you know, it wasn't just me showing up and teaching. It was me participating and actually connecting with them. So it felt equally as wonderful to me. It felt like a safe space where we could really talk about what's going on in our own lives. And that's the beauty of the mind-body medicine model is group. You know, the group is very powerful and each group is very unique and very different. So it felt good to me to be able to connect with my colleagues as well as lead them in some things that they could learn for themselves.
I think it's awesome that you offered group support to perhaps a group of physicians who weren't used to it. I don't know who you work with, but that's something that I always see that a provider, a physician, is so used to taking care of everyone else, right? But self-care is something that needs to be really taught.
It's so true. It is hard. It's very hard for physicians to stop and look and care for themselves. And that's, again, what the New York Times article was really about was, what did I do? I was actually chair of medicine at the time that, you know, the pandemic started. And I put an alarm on my phone to check in with myself every hour on the hour because I'm frontline family medicine. So I was dealing with all of my patients, my community, my family, my friends, you know, my colleagues, and trying to roll all of our specialties into telemedicine. So it was a pretty intense time. But every hour when my alarm would go off, I would say, what do I need in this moment? Maybe it's just to go outside and take a breath of fresh air. Maybe it's to take my cup of tea. Maybe it's to just go to the bathroom. Maybe it's, you know, to do some soft belly breathing. And when the alarm would go off, if I was with a patient, I did it with a patient. I told them, this, my alarm just went off right now. In this moment, I'm asking myself, what do I need? And I'm going to do this with you. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really powerful for us to be an example to each other. You know, I can't just tell you, go do this. Like, I have to really do it myself. We have to be living our lives this way. And then I think people see that they want to do more of that for themselves. You know, it's okay. It's okay for my doctor to care for herself. So it's okay for me as a mom to care for myself, you know, to take this time. I think even mothers have a hard time, right? So mothers don't always stop and take care of themselves. And
yes, we tend to be big time providers and caregivers and all of that. As a matter of fact, sometimes when I talk about the statistics of who listens to our podcasts, over 60% of our listeners are women. And so I always feel like women need to hear this message, and women tend to be the ones that share the message and bring it back to their homes to either teach their husbands. And, you know, and I'm looking at the statistics and what people identify as. So over 60% being they identify as female, which can, we can assume maybe that they are the main caregivers. But in general, whoever is listening can always learn about these modalities. And you have a whole list of programs that our listeners may be interested in. But I want to address what you mentioned, which was your article. You were featured in the New York Times. And if you can talk to us in more detail about physician burnout.
It's a very difficult time for our entire world. But as physicians who are really trying to navigate a new virus and figure out what to do with this and to, you know, answer everybody's questions and to save lives along the way, it's actually something that I think just me trying to just survive myself and to care for my patients myself and do this work within my own colleagues in my hospital system. The New York Times reached out to me and wanted to feature the work that I was doing with the physicians. So what I did is I did these mind-body medicine skills groups where we would check in. And I would also do Doctors in the Kitchen, Food as Medicine. And those programs, we would just meet virtually, either sometimes in my kitchen, sometimes in the commercial kitchen. I've partnered with Phipps Botany Hall Teaching Kitchen in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I used to be live doing these programs, but now everything is online. So I would have my colleagues jumping in from all over the world now. So I had to learn that I have to advertise time zones. Like, that was a thing. I'm like, sorry. I'm not used to putting time zones down. When I'm doing the Doctors in the Kitchen, it historically was just the doctors in the kitchen talking about culinary medicine and food, trying to get my colleagues to just eat better. Like, that was like my primary focus. And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, okay, well, now I need to sneak a little bit of mind body in there. And the mind body really teaches self-care is the center of healthcare. Putting on your own oxygen mask before putting on the one beside you. And so if we're not doing this, if physicians are not caring for themselves, they're not caring for others. Really, they're not. And so by caring for myself, I am caring for my family. I am showing respect to my family, that I love myself, that I love myself enough that I'm going to care for myself first, and I'm going to be around for them longer because I'm caring for myself. And I'm putting that time into myself. So, you know, just mentioning these things, like, this is, you know, they're like, oh, I've never thought of this before. You know, I think in our training, we're not trained to do this. We're trained to care for others. You know, we are just, that's all we're taught. You don't say, no, I can't take this next admission. No, I can't do this. No, you know. And the system is broken on top of that, right? So we have a very broken hospital system where, you know, disease is being treated in a way that, you know, we're just putting a pill for every ill, and we're not really getting to the root cause, which is what integrative medicine really looks at. What is the root cause of what you're experiencing right now? And so the majority of the problems that I care for in a family medicine setting is the root cause being stress right now, you know, mental health, things like that. And so I think globally across the board, that's something that we're all going through, and physicians being the worst. Teachers are another one that are really, you know, I say physicians, I mean, medical personnel in general, you know, hospitals, nurses, you know, everybody in the hospital system wearing a mask. I was just in a mask for 10 hours. So I just took my mask off to come to be with you. I'm very happy to have my mask off to be here on the screen with you.
I was thinking as you were describing this whole physician burnout, it kind of took me back to what you started with in our conversation, which was you kind of saw that the system was broken early on with your son. There were some things that were not right in the system, and I wanted to sort of go into this to kind of help fix it. You tend to see the same patients all the time, and you know, this routine thing, the mundane things that contribute to burnout, and that's what patients sometimes experience on the other end.
Yeah, and things were definitely happening that shouldn't have been happening, you know, and we didn't have answers. As physicians, you're used to, you know, you do this and this happens, but with COVID, nothing made sense. So you know, you would see one case that looked one way and another case, and we're like, what is that? Now it doesn't even look, you know, I have, and again, in my practice, family medicine, I have patients who need a double lung transplant and they get COVID. You'd think I was scared for these people, truly scared. Mm-hmm. And he did fine.
Yes.
Okay. He did fine. And then my husband, on the other hand, didn't do as well. You know, he's a very healthy, you know, young, I say we're young, yes, young we man who takes good care of himself. So, you know, it's, and then at one point I was like, okay, it's our microbiome, you know, maybe it's that. So I was really like, okay, let's like work on our microbiomes. But then I see my, throw my dad under the bus, but my dad who doesn't always eat the best, and he did fine. So I'm like, what?
Right. Right.
It doesn't make sense. Like none of it makes sense. I think I went on Facebook publicly and said I had COVID. I did fine. However, I actually worked the entire time virtually on screens, seeing patients, and I had a stuffy nose. That was it. And I lost my smell a while in, I realized, because typically, you know, I have my essential oils always with me. And I went to like put it on and, you know, right. I couldn't smell. And I was like, wait, what? What? I can't smell. Like it was the weirdest thing. I could taste, but I couldn't smell. So, but again, you know, somebody will come in and they've had COVID and they're smelling like their nose smells like a sewer or the fish market. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why you're, I don't know how to fix this. I'm sorry. So I think that that's been the stressor for physicians, is not knowing, and really, you know, not know, and the whole world in general, right? Because what is anxiety? And it's fear of the unknown. And there's so much unknown in everything right now, but how do we combat that? Coming to this present moment. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, I'm currently safe and well, you're currently safe and well, we have our breath. As long as we have our breath, we're okay. You know, as long as we're breathing, there's more right with us than wrong with us. So mm-hmm. I always say, like, go back to your breath. Take a few deep breaths in through your nose, mm-hmm. out through your mouth.
I'm now doing it with you. I just kind of,
right. Like activating your parasympathetic nervous system, moving us from fight or flight, go, 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 this busy life, this busy world, this world of uncertainty into the rest, relax, digest, I'm okay, I've got this, you know, and that's really what we need to do. And that's, you know, again, every hour on the hour, move yourself out of sympathetic into parasympathetic and tell yourself, remind yourself you're okay, you're well, you know, grab an oil, grab a tea, mm-hmm. you know, just look at, you know, moments of awe is another thing. I actually was in a study, and UC Berkeley was doing a study on moments of awe and microdosing mindfulness, it's called, because truly in this moment, you can be in awe of something. I invite you, Maya, to look around you in this moment and just choose something to be in awe of.
Wow. I'm getting chills just thinking about it.
I mean, I'm in awe of your beautiful Himalayan lamp behind you. I'm in awe of your little yoga girl that's beside you. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we can be in awe of so many things. There's so much beauty around us. The birds chirping, the leaves on the trees, you know, just really coming into this moment and stopping. Mm-hmm. And so again, when I, you know, my bracelet on my wrist can be a reminder to when I look down, oh yeah, I should look at a moment of awe, like something. What can I be in awe of in this moment? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. choose something.
Yeah.
And do it with the person that's around you, because we all need this. There is not one human being on this planet that I think does not need more presence, more mindfulness, more awareness, more mind-body connection. And I think that coming out of this will help so many people really see the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. If we do it right, if we play our cards right, right?
I agree. Many people who I speak to because of the podcast kind of had that sort of like an awakening, like an opportunity, like a rebirth. Almost. And it's so beautiful to see that. And yes, many of us had to turn the television off early last year and just stop watching all the stuff that consumed us and contributed to that that fear of what's going to happen next. So
right. And fear is just anxiety of the unknown. And so if you just shut that off, you know, my husband tells me what I need to know. Like, he's like, okay, hey, this is going on. You need to know. Cause I live in this little bubble. I really try to protect myself from, you know, I will go on social media and post to connect with the people, my people that follow me and are part of my life, my world, my patients and family and friends, but I'm not on there scrolling, looking at all the bad things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And all of these fear-based things that are going on, because that's not good. Again, that sends you into sympathetic overdrive, which is a stress response, which can create disease. You know, mm-hmm. it leads to so many different disease processes. And most of the time when I give a person their review of systems and look through all of them, so many of them are stress-driven. Really?
Yes.
You know, I can go through, you know, GI stuff, a lot of gastrointestinal problems, a lot of, you know, headaches, muscle aches and pains, just because, you know, their body is tense and they're not relaxing. A couple of little tips. My husband and I actually will do a 6-second kiss.
Oh.
We'll do a 20-second hug.
Yeah.
We hold hands before we eat to move us into parasympathetic, and we'll take some deep breaths together and talk about what we're grateful for the day, instead of just, how was your day? Fine. How was your day? Fine. Or it's usually, how's your day? Busy. How was your day? Busy. Right. But so we try to really put these different little things in to help us, mm-hmm. because we're human beings too. And we're always working on our marriage, you know, marriage is tough, right?
I think a lot of us were challenged last year when we had to be under the same roof and experiencing similar stress. You know, I think many marriages really were challenged. I don't know, but that's what it appeared like. So you just mentioned the 20-second hug, which I recently learned about. Why the 20 seconds?
Well, to just move you into parasympathetic. You know, and also, like, if you're angry with one another, or if, you know, one person does something that irritates you, try the 6-second kiss if you've never done it. Just like lip to lip, you know, not like, you know,
right?
No French kiss, but a kiss. Just, and I immediately relax. I just feel my whole body, and I just am like, this is so wonderful. Mm-hmm. So you know, it just moves you to a different place. So you can't really be angry when you're kissing. Or hugging, or that, or you squeeze really hard, I guess. But you're really supposed to be relaxing with one another, you know, relaxing into one another.
Yes. Okay. So, Dr. Thompson, you are going to talk to us about sound therapy. And along with that, you were also recently featured in the Going Om film. So, what exactly is sound therapy? Is there science behind it? And how can we get started on, you know, using sound to improve our wellness?
Yeah. So I am so excited about the documentary Going Om. It's OM. And there's a Facebook page there. You can get it on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes. I don't know. There's all kind of platforms. It's on my Facebook and I'm going to post something on Instagram. I haven't gotten to it yet. It actually talks about, you know, sound has actually been around for many, many years and has been used in healing in rituals for many years, going back to the Native Indians and their, you know, the dances that they have done. And, you know, also the didgeridoo is actually where I had one of my big aha experiences with sound. Sound can be used really to move you again from sympathetic into parasympathetic. Sound is all around us, really. Mm-hmm. And some sounds are annoying, right? Like if you're in the ICU and the bells and the everything's going off, my trauma pager, like I will always, my trauma pager sends me into sympathetic like that, because I knew that the trauma pager was like, okay, go, the helicopter's landing, we got to go. So there's good sounds, there's bad sounds. And you can use sound though as a kind of training wheels for meditation and my, you know, bringing you into a state of peace and calming. And it can really help with things like migraine headaches and tension in the body, chronic pain. It can help with depression, anxiety. It really helps you to calm your mind. It can help in cancer, you know, just helping a person to really relax more and release their stress when they couldn't have otherwise. So, mm-hmm. And you know, as we said, that 90% of the diseases are actually stress related. So it's mm-hmm. very important that we consider sound and how we can use sound in our own lives. So I have been working with the Center for Sound Therapy for the past 4 or 5 years. And they are actually located in Boardman, Ohio. They have a live sound studio mm-hmm. that you can go in and experience a sound session. They mix it with Reiki or, you know, just sound. Some are just gongs, some are just bowls. And you can really choose, or you'll learn that what sounds you like and what vibrates and resonates with you. And every person is going to be different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's access to do this online. With the filmmaker doing a Going Ohm collective where you can do a session online that you can experience. And I've done that myself in my own home during COVID to actually experience that, which was very nice. But sound therapy allows you to feel lighter. It actually helps with pain. And sometimes it may cause you to feel a certain like tension in your body, but if you breathe through it, it's really helping to move the energy through your chakras. Mm. And we know a lot of times that disease can come because of chakras being not open. So that's where there's tension, right? So the chakras start to move more freely because the sound can vibrate them, you know, help to vibrate them open. So it decreases that tension. It actually can improve circulation. It can help lower your blood pressure. And it can be very healing for some people. So it's a music in general, we think of as a very powerful tool. I mean, that was one of my things. Like I always want nice music on, calming music. At the tap of a button, I've got playlists for, you know, and I'm sure music resonates with a lot of people.
Do you remember the Japanese scientist who did his water experiment with crystals? And by using different words labeled on the water, the glass of water, it really intrigued me because I was interested in all of this as well. And what he did was basically, so I have a glass of water, say he has two waters, and you speak something to the water or put a label on it like love. Or I hate you, you're stupid, you know, these kind of things. You're speaking, you're sending energy to the water, and then he'll freeze it. And he was able to show under a microscope that the crystals form differently when there's positive energy, positive words. They're like floral crystal, beautiful crystals. And then when they have the negative energy sent to them, they're distorted. When you offered to talk about sound therapy, that was the first thing that came to my mind, was that if that happens outside of our body to the water, what is happening inside of our cells?
So I just actually presented this to our medical executive team the other day in our in one of our meetings with our CEOs and our, you know, I'm actually vice chief of staff of at UPMC Hospital, UPMC Horizon in Jameson. And I'll have to pull it up, the exact science, the exact article, but in chronic pain, we know that if sound therapy is used postoperatively, that patients need less pain medication and heal faster because of sound therapy. So, I mean, that's something that it really, and what is our goal really is to, you know, decrease medications, and because medications create side effects. So many of the problems that we have in our world are from medication side effects and, mm-hmm. and the cost of medication. I mean, I can go on and on. So I'm considered to be a deep prescribing specialist. So my goal, if when I see a patient, whether it's a family medicine patient or an integrative medicine consult or lifestyle medicine consult, it is to see what medicines I can take away. So, mm-hmm. you know, if a person comes to me on 15 medications, my goal is to see if they can all go away. Really?
Yes.
Because the body wakes up most of the time. I just had a discussion with somebody about antidepressants, you know, coming off of antidepressants, you feel more alive. You feel less clouded, less foggy. You feel more yourself if you're able to, but you can't just stop the medication. You have to use some of these different integrative modalities. You have to be very present and mindful with yourself. You know, maybe every hour on the hour, you have your cup of tea, you have some essential oils, you do some sound therapy, you could do some yoga, you do some soft belly breathing, you do some shaking and dancing, but you're constantly working on it. And what I usually tell people is like, you know, you do a journal so that you can be very aware of where you are in your, you know, in your journey. Yeah. So sound is very powerful. And even so we've seen, I don't have the journal article reference right here, but I think it was in 2017. Also, they did a study at UPMC where they took physicians and hospital workers and they put headphones on as they walked through the hospital. And the physicians reported a happiness factor higher with their headphones on and more attentive to their work, because they were blocking out all the background sound. So mm-hmm. that was also very interesting to know that, you know, really silence is sometimes important. You know, all this, you know, the traffic from in the inner city of Chicago can be really, you know, like too much. I live in the country on 40 acres of land. So it's very different than being in New York City downtown. So, you know, you live in New York City, you're constantly aware of those sounds, you know, that they become part of your world. Mm-hmm. So you may need silence instead of, you know, more sound, but the vibration that occurs from the sound therapy, from the bowls or from the gongs or from the flutes, you know, those energies really do work inside of your body. And everybody's body is going to be different in what it needs. Like you said, like, mm-hmm. it's so hard to know. And I really love what you said about the positive affirmations and, you know, because you say it and it occurs, right? You want to manifest mm-hmm. what you want. And I have a list of positive affirmations that I give to my patients in their after visit instructions, because in the most depressed of depressed patients, they're hopeless and helpless. And so I say, okay, every hour on the hour, I want you to go to your positive affirmations and read these. Even if you don't believe them, even if you think it's just a bunch of crap, I'm telling you, you know, like I am awesome. I am amazing. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am happy. I am whole. I am brave. I am strong. I mean, the list is endless of things, but we have to say those things. Look in the mirror, do the mirror work, you know, where you're actually telling yourself these things. So, yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things I love about sound is it transforms me and takes me to another place. It just, I feel, and it's always different each time. And when I personally have sound therapy, it just, I have so much more clarity, you know, helps in my decision-making. It helps in my own relaxation response. So I encourage people to really look into the film Going Home, which I actually have some dates and I'll try to post them, but there are going to be some like debut showings online that you can watch. I know one is in two other countries that they were looking at. I just got the email on that today, but I can follow that up with you. But yeah, it's an amazing tool that we all have access to, and you just grab a pair of headphones and put it on, and you know, they can do, you can do it in the privacy of your own home if you can't do it out in an area near you, playing the music yourself or sounds, you know.
And I'll make sure to include the link in the show notes to the film and of course, all of your links. I believe in essential oils as well. I have an essential oil here.
I have doTERRA, and doTERRA actually had the study on where they put the citrus bliss in the hospital. Okay. And they improved the aromatherapy, improved the happiness of the patients, the patient satisfaction, the nurses, the doctors, everybody was right. happier because the whole hospital smelled like creamsicles or something. So, I mean, I love that. I love that yeah. research, you know? So I use doTERRA. I also use, I have a couple of Young Living. I think they make the thieves oil, which I really love.
Yeah.
And so, I also love Amrita, A-M-R-I-T-A. Those are my three.
Okay. So I just wanted to clarify. So you work for the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And so I just, if you want to just briefly tell us, what was life before the pandemic? Like, what would we normally see you do on a daily or weekly basis? And how is life now with the pandemic still sort of going on and you're still wearing a mask?
You might make me cry. It's been a huge change. Actually, nobody's asked me that question. So I'm sort of like, whoa. My life before COVID. My life before COVID was I was seeing my patients 100% in the office. And I was doing community programs once or twice a month. And I was doing them in Dinner with a Doc. I was doing them in sound therapy. I was doing them in art therapy. I was teaching yoga, like yoga for kids. I was doing Love the Body You Live In, going grocery shopping with my patients. All my programs were live. I was out there with the people. And I think it was March 17th of last year, I rolled everything into telemedicine overnight. I went home and I didn't go back into the office for 2 months, 2.5 months. I was completely solidly at home, mostly because I was also trying to still figure out how we can all have resources in every specialty across our system, because I was chair of medicine at the time. And so I was in meetings twice a day. When COVID started, we had a meeting twice a day. And that was just for our hospital. But then we had also our big meetings for our whole system couple of times per week to update us what was going on. And then we had emergency meetings when there were deaths and, you know, trying to figure out what to do.
My husband is chief of staff for his hospital. And when it came to that moment of having the conversation with the staff and everyone, the do not resuscitate, I'm assuming you guys had that conversation as well.
Rationing care, never in my lifetime would I have ever imagined thinking about rationing care of human beings. Never. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very hard to go through those conversations. And what was that going to look like? Also, was I going back into the ICU to work? Because I'm trained to do it. You know, but here I am, I'm an integrative and lifestyle family medicine physician who doesn't love the ICU setting because I like to prevent disease. I don't like to, you know, that's just not my thing. I appreciate my colleagues so much who do that, but that had to cross my mind. Was I going to go back into the hospital if I was needed? Of course I would go back in if I was needed, but I made sure everything was, you know, situated on the outpatient side for my patients. I also was very firm with my patients that I was figuring out how to get a connection with them, because again, connection is so powerful. I wanted them to feel safe that they had me in their home at any click of a button if they needed me. So, which was a little crazy, trying to get your 88-year-old people on a screen and figuring that out. I'm like, there must be somebody that comes to your house that helps you with your groceries. When does that occur? And so I was like on the phone with a, you know, FaceTiming at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday night because I wanted to make sure that, you know, my patient saw my face and she knew that I knew how to get in if she needed me. So, so to me, that was really powerful. And I also teach a lot. So I couldn't figure out how to socially distance with students and then all of this. And so I stayed more virtual for teaching purposes because I could put my patients on telemedicine and my student on telemedicine. And we all were on the screen together seeing patients. So that was quite amazing. And so now what is post-COVID, or we're almost there, winding down, thank goodness, is I am in the building one day a week doing routine physicals, and the rest of the time I'm virtual. And so, and our hospital, nothing has gone back into one-on-one group gatherings. So I'm still not able to do any of the community programs or, you know, I'm still teaching online, but I will say that my patients, I have patients who travel from Cleveland, Akron, Pittsburgh, Erie, who come to see me. And I'm also licensed in Ohio and Florida, as well as Pennsylvania. So I've been able to do consults on patients. You know, there's not really restriction right now with this across state lines. So I've been able to do more integrative and lifestyle consults across the world, which I wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. So that has led me to, like you said it, like make us rethinking our whole lives. Like, what does this look like? And, you know, becoming reborn in a different way. I was never telemedicine prior to this at all. Mm-hmm. But now I'm able to see, you know, my friend's dad in Florida, if she needs me to, and do an integrative consult and get him off meds, you know,
right,
which has been amazing.
I think it's the most fascinating thing in a way that you sort of, you know how they say pivot, you had to pivot this way. You went full-time pretty much telemedicine, but now your reach is greater. On top of that, you are boarded in lifestyle medicine, in integrative medicine. You have this whole mind-body connection that a lot of physicians don't have. So people that have access to you are really lucky that you're available this way.
Yeah. I mean, my patients that don't have to drive anymore are so happy. Yeah. They're like, oh my gosh. But then I had somebody who drove from the east side of Pennsylvania. They drove like 5 hours for their consult. And I said, do you know I'm virtual? And she said, yes. She said, but I just wanted to feel your energy in person at the first time. And I was like, I love that because yeah, I still do love my office space. I still do love being face to face with people. But I will tell you, it happened again today. Somebody was crying about, you know, the stress of COVID, and they were in their mask, crying into their mask. And I don't love that. Mm-hmm. You know, at least if we're on the screens, they don't have a mask on their face, you know?
Right.
So I'm able to see their smile. So I don't know. I'm still, I guess, I don't know what is best. I'm still learning. I don't love being on a screen all the time. I learned from the dermatologist I need to be using sunblock on my skin because I'm in front of the screen so much. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that.
I hadn't thought about it, but thank you for sharing.
I don't know if you know anything about biohacking, but I'm also one of those biohackers. Like, I really love biohacking. So
yeah,
I was, I've got my little light over here, my biohacking light and stuff. Yeah. So I have all kind of like tricks and tools because the goal for me is always anti-aging, living beautifully, aging gracefully. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we live our best life? How can we need as little of medication as possible? How can we be as happy and healthy as possible and be the ripple that other people want to be that as well? Like, I want to be happy and healthy. Like, I want to share this with others because really what I say is every person I come into contact with, I want you to take everything that I share and give it. And, You know, I think that that's the beauty of the work that we all do, is really just be that change we want to see in the world. And I think that we all have been able to come together a lot better virtually. You know, you and I, who would have thought that we're sitting here having this discussion, you know, and we just, how did we do that? Well, we were just in the, you know, American College of Lifestyle Medicine member interest group talking about women's health and talking about, you know, that we have a special menopause subcommittee where we were talking about, you know, all the women in the world, listen, you're going to go through menopause at some point, but menopause is not a disease. So how can we move through menopause as beautifully and gracefully as, you know, healthy as we can? Well, it's by using these things we're talking about, lifestyle medicine, integrative medicine, you know, but who would have thought that that, you know, would bring us together and then That's bring true. Us here and share all this information with everyone.
Right. I signed up for the Women's Interest Group a while back, well, in 2019. And I remember Dr. Nancy Erickson, who I really enjoy speaking with, she said, you need to get active in the group, because I had signed up, but I really wasn't doing anything. And my question was, well, what can I do? I'm not a physician, right? That was in my mind. Although for us, it's always about sharing information for patients and everyone else. Once I started attending the meetings, I realized, wow, just wow, what everyone is doing. The interest group, you're leading the menopause interest group, the subcommittee, is that right?
Yeah.
And what's the whole goal with an interest group? And this is, by the way, part of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. They have various interest groups where experts, physicians, coaches, they all come together, and it's like a think tank.
Absolutely a think tank. And you're right. It's not just physicians. It's because listen, we need everybody in our world. Everybody has an important job and an important gift. The diversity in our group of women is wonderful because everybody has a voice to share and bring something to the table. Our mission really is to help women with lifestyle modalities. And that is the mission, is to teach the pillars of lifestyle medicine, how women can incorporate them into women's health, into all those different areas, whether it be puberty, you know, adolescence, childbearing age, you know, fertility, menopause, you know, hormonal aging, you know, all these different things are important. So how can we use the pillars of lifestyle medicine specifically for women? So the member interest groups, there's many different member interest groups. You know, there's one on fitness I belong to. I think there's one on psychiatry, and there's all kinds. But this particular one, of course, I have a passion for women's health. I'm a woman, you know, like I have to take good care of myself. And that was actually why I did my first mind body medicine conference. I went to Food as Medicine and Women's Health at Esalen. And I originally was thinking to myself, oh, I'm going to go for my patients. And then I was like, hey, you better go for yourself. You know, you better go. And it was the best decision I ever made. I loved Food as Medicine for Women's Health. I loved Esalen Institute. I then did a nutritional psychiatry like workshop as well. I went to Kripalu and did Mind, Mood, and Food. And then that's really like, I fell in love with all the mind body medicine people because they're really wonderful, wonderful human beings. I mean, so emotionally intelligent, really like in tune with their own bodies and just kind and want to help and share this work. And that's really what you're doing, you're sharing. And so I think that what you're doing is so powerful because your voice is being heard. Then people are listening, they're taking this, they're sharing it with their families, they're sharing it with their loved ones. And that's how we're going to make these changes in the world. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
I hope to really be with you again someday in person live so I can hug you.
When I think of menopause, for example, just to kind of bring you back a little bit, I wonder if it's still considered sort of a taboo topic. You know, I wonder if sometimes older women shy away from sharing with the women that are entering the menopause stage. And so when I learned about, you know, you leading that group, I thought, gosh, this is awesome because we need more people on board to talk about menopause, to teach us what we can do at an early age to prevent some of these symptoms that we experience as we age.
I don't want to forget to say this because I think this is so important. You were talking about how things are taboo. It used to also be taboo to talk about sexual health. And sexual health is so important. I mean, I did a community program called The Myths of Aging and Sexual Health, because I'll never forget when I had a patient who's, I said something about her, you know, sex. And she's like, well, I'm 50 now. I'm not having sex. And I was like, what? You're 50. You know, like, really? Like, you're not having sex because you're 50? You're not dead. Right. And then I was thinking, wait, people just like, we need to talk about this, right? Like, the thing is sex is healthy. And so orgasms are healthy. You know, sexual health is important. We should be talking about this stuff. So there's a whole field of integrative gyne that really digs into exactly what, imagine all the modalities that I just talked about. I mean, I did a yoga medicine course that's like really yoga medicine for women's health. Mm-hmm. Because part of what happens is women push themselves too much. So when you push yourself too much, then you may have more symptoms of stress. You know, then you're going to have more symptoms of your hot flashes, because what are hot flashes? It's just your body telling you something. You're not doing something that is making me feel good inside. So remember, what did I say? I look at the root cause of the problem. And so when I think of a hot flash, I say, okay, well, what's the root of this hot flash? The root could be lack of sleep. It could be lack of diversity of nutrients. You know, it could be the foods, like, right, there's certain foods that boost, you know, that do help your hormones. It could be stress. It could be lack of exercise. It could be lack of going outside, like, whatever, you know, it could be so many different things. Mm-hmm. So you really what we're trying to do is to make it more common to talk about these things, to help women think about what is the root cause and how can we fix that? I have handouts for everything. I'm like the queen of the handouts. I've got like 400 handouts created. Somebody just said the other day, can you share my handouts? I'm like, you're getting 400 things. And I do, I share it with everybody, because even if you think about it, and I'll take you just back to women's health for a minute. How many people get menstrual migraines, or they get, you know, cramping around their cycle, things like that? Well, again, it's a symptom, right? What's the symptom is the body's telling you something. The body's preparing to have a menstrual cycle. So your hormones become off a little bit. So your body is getting a little stress and strain just because it's preparing to, you know, shed the lining. And so you may need more magnesium, you may need more zinc, you may need more vitamin D, you may need more B12, you may need, you know, you may need different foods around your cycle. So usually what I tell my patients is here's your food list. If you're having a hormonal type of issue, or focus on these foods. You know, women say they crave chocolate around their cycle. Guess what? Yeah. Chocolate's high in magnesium. So really, would it, right? Oh, right. So it's probably you need magnesium. So you can, I'll give you a magnesium food list. Try these foods. Magnesium is helpful in headaches. It all comes full circle.
Okay.
So just start. And that's, again, listening to your body. Our bodies, you are your own best healer. And our body, a symptom is just giving us a sign that something is wrong. And I always tell patients, you know, love your body for that reason, because your body is full of information. So then just sit with it and we'll figure out what is actually the root cause. Yes. And we'll try to solve that.
I love it. Okay. I had previously mentioned, I find it interesting that older physicians are not active or very present on social media, and that the younger generations are very confident. And I love that. I love that I can follow someone on social media and learn about, just like you said, like, they're living what they're preaching. So they're, you know, for me, it's all about lifestyle, because that's what I'm drawn to, right? But, you know, they share tips. They get, you know, there are physicians that get on TikTok. They're very active. You hear about Clubhouse. I'm not on those, but I am, you know, on Instagram. And that's like my favorite platform. Do you want to talk about any of that? I just think it's so important for physicians to kind of really make use of this platform that is free. To advertise, to share about yourself.
It really is. And I actually, so I'm on Dr. Michelle Thompson on Facebook, and on Instagram, I am MT Yogi Doc, YOGIDOC. I actually also have a website, so I don't want to forget to tell you this, but it's bewelltherapies.org, BEWELLTHERAPIES www.integrativemedicine.org. And we have a YouTube channel and there's tons of free videos and things on there. So it was so important to me to stay connected with people during the pandemic that I really would jump on and just say, hey guys, I'm out in nature. I'm taking a walk. Like, this is where I am right now in this moment. And just so people knew, like, okay, there's, you know, she's still alive. She's okay. Like, she hasn't completely lost her mind. Or like, hey guys, I'm making, you know, this in my kitchen, you know, like, I just wanted to connect with people. If I have a good recipe, my husband is kind of trained, like, can we touch the food yet? Like, can we eat it? Like, cause I want to take a picture of all the food. Like, I definitely have a food photography fetish probably. Like, awesome. I love to take food photos. Especially when I create it myself, that always makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I just think it's important and it's powerful because people, how do we learn? You know, I also have a little group that I created that I don't put a ton in, but I have a whole food plant-based teaching kitchen private group. I left it private because I didn't want food shaming and food judging. I'm really passionate and powerful about that. Mm-hmm. Food is a journey and it's a personal choice. And I also believe in intuitive eating. And so I was afraid I would have to police the group too much if I let everybody in. So, I have that. It's called Be Well Therapy's Whole Food Plant-Based Teaching Kitchen. It's just WFPB. Because I really think that what we're trying to do with all of this, with lifestyle medicine in general, is trying to get people to be plant strong and just move the needle in the direction of wellness. So, you know, if we get people to eat more plants, love more, move more, you know, stress less, connect more. Like, those are all just easy things for us to do. And connect. I mean, it's in the pillars of lifestyle medicine. So we need to be connecting.
Is there anything else that you would like for people to do in terms of follow you or sign up for some programs that you're currently running right now?
Yeah. Well, if you're a physician and you're interested in a mind body skills group, then definitely reach out to me. If you are a physician or a healthcare worker, I did have a medical student and a nurse in my one group, and they were great to be with us as well. If you are looking for, you know, an integrative or lifestyle medicine consult, certainly you can reach out to me. I feel like just having awareness, you know, if you want to go onto my website on the YouTube channel, I did a shop with a doc program that's recorded there. So you can go shopping with me. We have Tai Chi classes on there that you can jump in and join a Tai Chi class. You know, I think just knowing that I'm always a resource and always willing to connect and help others is my passion, is sharing my life as my work. And, you know, my lifestyle is my medicine. And so that's really something I'm very passionate and powerful about. So Going Ohm, go watch the movie Going Ohm, check out some sound therapy, utilize that in your life and your journey, practice moments of awe, microdosing mindfulness, you know, utilizing silence. We don't always have to have somebody talking, you know, maybe just have a silent car ride on your way to work. You don't have to be on the phone. You don't have to be listening to music. Like, what is it? You know, I love when you think about Alanis Morissette, when she said, why are we so petrified of silence? So many of us cannot calm our minds. So, you know, just work on that a little bit more. So, and I just want to take one deep breath together. So let's take a deep breath in through our nose. And let it out through our mouth. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Thompson. This has been awesome.
You're welcome so much. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to the Plant-Based DFW podcast show. If you like our content, please like, share, and leave a review. Our goal is to provide quality episodes to help support the community.